Audio, radio, audio.
My name is Eric from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Saturday, May 1st, tune in the 8th annual Reveille broadcast on WGXC. It's 25 hours following the sunrise around the earth and listening to the dawn chorus at places throughout the world. The broadcast starts at midnight Eastern time, starting in London, heading across the Atlantic and picking up sounds from Wave Farm in the 5 a.m. hour. Then you hear daybreak across the United States, across the Pacific Ocean, into Asia, Africa, Europe, and back in London at midnight. Tune in all day, May 1st, from midnight to midnight, to Reveille on the radio at WGXC.org and go to soundtent.org for more information about this broadcast.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit DedicatedPresentation.com. Or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Grabbable, handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Getaway on WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin Getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Amy Tessier. Now, Amy describes herself as a mother, a wife, a daughter, and a friend. She works for a senior living organization as a director of quality, a job that takes her all over America, to include right here in Columbia County. She has lived in Rochester, New York, all of her life, and more recently, her family now own a cabin in the woods near Cuba, New York. Amy's hobbies are playing cards, being with friends and family, and sitting around a good campfire. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Amy.
Thank you.
Now, can I just add a caveat, right? Now, this woman sitting here, it kind of looks like to my left, but it's actually to my right, or the other way about. She's one of the nicest women I have ever met in my life, and I'm not just saying that. She is. So that bio doesn't show or doesn't tell the right story. So
thank you.
Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andy.
Perhaps we'll find out what she thinks about you.
That's another story. Now, maybe this is a family show, Mike. So we need to be careful.
You know, Amy, I was interested in knowing you work for a senior living organization as a director of quality, and you have to travel for your work. Are there some notable or memorable places you've traveled for your career, for your job?
You know, I think that, you know, obviously we go where our company's buildings are, and we're in most of the U.S., not quite every state, but most of them. I think for me, I've gotten to see so many places that I probably would have never ventured to before just because I never had a reason to. And it has really, really opened up my mind to finding out the different ways that people live and the different, you know, cultures and the different foods. And, you know, I do love food, so that's my favorite part. But, you know, I mean, just places like I probably would have never gone to, like, certain places in California before until I went for my job and got to explore a little bit and see a little bit. So I think just having the opportunity to see areas that has led us further into other vacations and stuff, or my husband and I going and exploring more just based on what I've seen, just some really cool places throughout the US. You know, when you don't really get, you end up going to the same places all the time, this gives me a broader view of just what life is really like outside of, you know, my little bubble.
Yeah.
Now, Amy, you work with seniors.
I do.
Now, COVID, I know we keep talking about COVID, and one of the reasons we're doing the show like it is right now is because of COVID, because Mike and I are usually in the studio together. But I know that in the very early stages of COVID, you were in, was it the Bronx?
Yeah, I was in New York.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us and give us a little sense of what you were doing there?
So I think everybody knows that when, you know, COVID really exploded in the US, New York got it first. And it was really an epic proportion. It was fast, it was hard, it was ugly and mean. And you know, when you're in a pandemic, it's all hands on deck. And, you know, when you have high-rise buildings with hundreds of residents, you need people there that can jump in and basically live and breathe it every minute. And, you know, we had some buildings where, you know, staff were scared. They didn't want to come to work, or, you know, they were afraid of exposing a loved one. Things happen. And, you know, when you work on the quality team, you don't just go in and, you know, audit and do quality. You are the everything. When they need something, you go in. And so I ended up pretty much living there about 18 hours a day in the building, you know, just doing everything and anything for months. And it was, you know, I couldn't go home to my family. I couldn't see them, my dog, anything. My kids, but
I notice how she says, I couldn't see anybody, my dog or my kids.
Well, my kids are a little older, so, you know, I don't think they missed me too much, but, you know, my husband, and he was, you know, he works in the hospital, so he was doing the same thing. We were working ridiculous hours. You know, 6 hours from home, 7 hours from home, somewhere in there. And, you know, you just can't go home. You can't expose people. And, you know, we were dealing with the pandemic in the beginning where we had no information. And every single day, probably 10 times a day, new information came in, and you had to roll with it, and you had to teach it, and you had to live it, and you had to get other people on board with it. And, you know, I have been in senior living for over 18 years, and this COVID has broken a lot of people in this industry. And I'm a pretty strong individual. It takes a lot to really rattle me. And I got to tell you, it was not easy. It was just, it took everything you had just to make it through a day. But we had to. We had to take care of the seniors that were in our care. We had to make sure that they had everything that they needed. But I must say, for every single person, and I didn't even have it the worst, the people in the hospitals that did, you know, but for every single person that has had to go through this and live this, my hat's off, because I'm a hard horse to break, and it almost broke me.
Wow. Well, so, thank you so much for all of your service, Amy, during this incredible time. It's the angels like you that are keeping everything going.
Can I just ask, what happened before you left? What did the staff do before you left?
Oh, my God. They were... You know, it's hard to make me cry. They made me cry in a good way. The staff that were there and that went through this, we'll call it a battleground, because that's kind of what it was for a period of time. They worked harder than anyone I've ever seen. And, you know, this is every background you could imagine working together, just trying to fight this together. But they rose to the occasion. They They did everything I asked of them. And, you know, of course, I was taking all my directive from everybody else in the world, whether it was, you know, the government, the state, the company, everything. They rose to the occasion. And I'm going to try to say this as politically correct as I can, but the staff that work there are tough cookies. They don't live in the luxury that some of our residents live in our buildings. They come from, you know, harder backgrounds. They take 4 buses and 2 subways to get to work. I mean, they just have a lot on their plate. And they came in every day and they rose to the occasion. But they're tough nuts to crack. You know, I'm going in. I'm not their normal administrator. I'm rolling out all this stuff. I'm making these demands. I'm on the floor with them. But they ended up essentially getting together, and it was scaring me for a little bit because I kept seeing all these people from all the different floors get together, and every time I would come around, they would disperse, and I thought, oh my God, they're all going to quit on me. What are they doing? And what it turned out to be was one day they asked me to come into the dining room. We had a huge dining room there so everybody could stay 6 feet apart. And the cook that was there, one of the cooks, he's a aspiring rapper. Singer, and he and pretty much the entire building rewrote the words to "Now You're in New York" by Alicia Keys about what we did. It was great. Wow.
But it was for you.
Yeah.
Wow.
It made me cry.
Yeah.
So there you are.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Thanks, Andy.
I know. Shall we move on, Mike?
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for sharing that, Amy, and again, for all that you've done during this historically difficult time. And
well, I have to say, you can't do it without a good team, and man, I had the best team.
Yeah.
You know, it affects everybody. You know, I had trouble getting tea bags. You know, it was...
Jeez, yeah. Man. Jeez. Terrible. So... now,
I also wanted to say that, even though Andy and I are sitting right next to each other, we've both been fully vaccinated.
Oh, yeah.
Probably we're good not, to say.
We're not being blasé, you know.
Now, your first song, Amy, is "There Goes My Life" by Kenny Chesney.
Yep.
Why that song?
Well, it's kind of my husband and my story, you know. We had a baby. I was 17. And we made a choice to, you know, do this, you know, and make a go at it. And we had every single obstacle and odd against us. And it's kind of just how we started out. And, you know, that baby is 30 years old now. And, you know, an adult and engaged and getting married and, you know, and, you know, it was really about, you know, kind of being in the beginning of where we were supposed to be, going off and living in dorms and going to college and all of this stuff, you know, and graduating, you know, right out of high school. And, you know, I mean, I was a month from my 18th birthday, and it was really about, how do we do this? How do we raise this kid and do this? And I think that the song really, really captures it's almost like it was written, you know, with us in mind.
All he could think about was, I'm too young for this. Got my whole life ahead. Hell, I'm just a kid myself. How am I gonna raise one? All he could see were his dreams go. So much for ditching this town and hanging out on the coast. Oh, well, those plans are long.
said, there goes my life. There goes my future. There goes my life. A couple years of up all night and a few thousand diapers later, that mistake he thought he made covers up the refrigerator. Oh yeah, he loves that little girl. Mama's waiting to tuck her in as she fumbles up those stairs. She smiles back at him, dragging that teddy bear sleep tight. Blue eyes and mountain curls. He smiles. There goes my life. There goes. Pairs of shoes on his American Express. He checked the oil, slammed the hood, said you're good to go. She hugged them both and headed off to the West Coast. And he cried, there goes my life. There goes my future. My everything. I love you, baby. Goodbye. There goes my life. There goes my life. Baby, goodbye. Baby, goodbye. There goes my life.
That was Kenny Chesney, There Goes My Life. Great song, poignant song, Amy.
Yes.
About you, Brian, your husband, and your daughter, Sammy.
Mm-hmm. So, interesting fact, when Andy moved here from Scotland, he was my babysitter for Sammy. And he used to take her to school and hang out with her. And he dropped a TV in her head one time.
I didn't know that.
We think that's what happened to her, but I don't know.
So the TV was on a large, tall stand, and she was standing, lying underneath it, rocking it. And the television fell off and hit on the head.
Oh, golly.
And I was like thinking, I'm going to be beaten up and jailed here.
Deported.
And Amy's reply was,
it happens.
Yeah. Hey, every kid, before I was 1 year old, I had busted my arm. I'd been dropped against a door, slammed my head against a door. And kids are resilient. In the words of
kids are rattled, rattled against the door. That was abuse, mate.
Ryan Reynolds said, "Kids are made out of rubber bands and magic." And
yes, that's a great way to describe that.
Yeah.
Now, a little thing about I found this quite interesting. This little piece of information about Kenny Chesney, right? Now, did you both know? And I think this is relevant to you two. In 2000, the year 2000, Kenny Chesney and Tim McGraw were arrested in Buffalo, New York.
So, I was at that concert.
Do tell.
And they stole a horse, a police horse, and rode it through the stadium and outside. And I was at that concert. It was great.
Oh, my heaven above.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that'll get you arrested.
Yeah, but I bet it was fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Actually, they both got acquitted in 2001.
Yeah, they.
So there you are.
Boy. So
maybe they ponied up.
Yeah. Hey, pretty good. I bet they did.
Dear.
Nice one.
So there you go.
Now, Amy, your first item is Tuesdays with Maury by Mitch Albom.
Yeah.
So you'll be taking that on your Catskill Cabin getaway. Why that book?
I have been reading that book for probably 20 years. Every year, about once a year, I reread that book. I think it grounds me. You know, you start to get caught up in the minutiae of life and all the stuff and, you know, the house and this and that and always trying to do all this stuff. And every once in a while, it just gets really overwhelming. And I think you need to be brought back down. And I read that book. And that book is really about, you know, life and the end of life and people that get lost along the way and how they come back, you know, and really reminisce about what's really important in life and those memories. And I think that family and friends are the most important thing you can have. And I think sometimes you can get just lost out there and you need to come back. You need to reground yourself and remember what's important.
Absolutely. Now, the book, for people who don't know, it's about Mitch Albom, who was a sports reporter.
Yeah.
Who found out that by watching TV, a news program that his old sociological teacher, his professor, had motor neurons disease. And coincidentally, there was a strike going on of reporters, and he ended up being able to go and see him every Tuesday, and there was like 14 encounters.
Yeah.
And he documents all that in the book and then adds some other stuff about himself and thoughts and all that. Mm-hmm. So really, really, again, a poignant book about life.
Yeah. You know, Amy, your line of work, working with the elderly, and, you know, talking about end of life, you reminded me that I watched a Netflix series recently, and I'm aware of a book of the same title called Surviving Death. And it's by an author, Leslie Kane. And they talk about all spectrum kind of paranormal things that are being investigated now, kind of a renewed interest in investigation, especially now that medical science has advanced to such a degree that people are being resuscitated when they've died or are near death. But also people who are elderly in end-of-life care or hospice, people who are near them observe things. You know, these people at their end-of-life, they claim to see loved ones. They are at peace. And have you experienced in your work anything like that?
Yeah, we have. And I've actually not only experienced it with people at work, but I experienced it with my grandmother. And it's very interesting. You know, oftentimes, you know, you think of death being very painful and very awful. And unfortunately for some it is, but for a lot of people, it's actually very peaceful. And it's, and you see people sometimes just talking in the air to nobody. Well, nobody to us, but somebody very much to them. Actually, my grandmother did that with me. It was the first time I ever encountered it. I wasn't in assisted living yet. You know, we're going back 28 years. I was sitting by her bed in her room, and she looked over and she was just going, I know. And she was talking to the air. And I said, you know, Grandma, who are you talking to? And she just turned and this woman had had a stroke and was not very coherent and really hadn't been present. And with the clearest voice, she said, I'm talking to your grandfather and I'm going to go see him soon. And then she died hours later.
Wow.
I've seen that happen with many residents. And sometimes when we have somebody on hospice, and just because you're on hospice doesn't mean that you can't communicate. You know, sometimes people think, oh, you're on hospice, you're just in a comatose state. That's not it at all. A lot of times you're very coherent and with it, your body's just failing. And I've had multiple people say to me, my husband keeps coming to me in my dreams.
Wow.
He talks to me. He sits in that chair over there. And you just know the time is near. And you know, to them, that's very, very real. And it may be real. I mean, I won't discount that at all, because they're so convincing that they're there that sometimes I even wonder if I'm like sitting on them, if I sit down in the chair, you know. But I think there's something to be said for that. I really do. I think that there's got to be a reason so many people do it.
There's, yeah.
Mike, was it you mentioned in an earlier show where, who was the guy from Apple that died? Steve Jobs.
Yeah, Steve Jobs.
That no long before he died, beyond the people who were around surrounding him, his family, he went, oh my God.
He just said, oh wow.
Wow.
He said, oh wow, three times.
Really?
So he was experiencing something incredible at the end of life. And there's actually and kind of an engineer, a businessman, I think he's a billionaire out, I think he's from Nevada, named Bob Bigelow. And he's created the Bigelow Institute for Consciousness Studies. And he's offered, they're doing an essay contest to kind of generate interest in discussion about this very topic. And it's $500,000 for the first place and, you know, a little bit of money for the runners up. But basically, they're offering rewards to people who can put together like a coherent argument for life after death. You know, kind of come up with proposals for, you know, how do we study that? You know, and he's said in interviews, he wants to know, is there something on the other side? And if we can nail that down, you know, yes or no, then go from there. If there is, then what's it all about? And what's it like? And what's the purpose? And how do you get there? And but they've opened it up to people who are pastors, hospice workers, you know, any sort of line of work where people have experience with this and can comment on it in a way that's scientific and informed. So I just think that's so fascinating. I mean, this is it. You know, this is something that affects all of us in the most intimate way, you know, something we will all experience. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so I'm really exhilarated by it, you know.
Are you thinking about writing an essay?
No. I don't have, I'm grossly unqualified and don't have any of the you know, I don't have any of these experiences.
That a human qualifies you.
No, but they want people who are like hospice workers, and they want pastors and they want people who are like, they want data. Like I've been with people, 500 people who are at end of life. And of that 500, 60% had experiences where they were seeing loved ones. And these things were in some instances corroborated, you know, like maybe they knew things that they shouldn't know, or they were told things about the future they shouldn't have known. And this can be evidence that would build a case to say, like, look, there's something more to this. It's not just neurons firing as the brain goes through the right. dying process.
And, you know, there's something comforting if people really do see people at the end of their moment, that maybe it takes the fear away. I think it's, you know, as sad as it is for the people here, I think it's quite beautiful for the people that get to experience that when they go.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You know, it's not the end. It's just a new beginning and a better beginning. It's a beginning of something that's far greater.
Right.
And, how exhilarating that would be. And so anyways,
that's awesome, though. I like that whole topic. I'll have to look into that.
Yep.
It's you should write an essay.
Am I going to write an essay on one experience?
Yeah.
I sat in a chair and I felt this almighty. Woo!
So, but it's good. It's called Surviving Death, and it's a series on Netflix. if you're interested.
Oh,
if you have
fantastic.
Netflix.
I will look that up. Thank you.
Yeah, very good. And so the author of the book that kind of goes with it, and she actually appears in this documentary, Leslie Kane, she's also written about other topics like UFOs, for instance, and through a scientific lens. And she's the one who broke in the New York Times the story about the Pentagon investigation, the Advanced Aerospace Identification Threat Program, ATIP program in 2017. And I've been reading a lot of this stuff up at my little camp, reading about UFOs but that takes me to our next item, tent and camp items.
Yes.
That you would like to take on your Catskill Cabin getaway. So what are some of these items that are important that you would take?
There's nothing better than being in the woods. You know, my favorite saying, and it's not my saying, it's just one that I really love is, you know, into the woods I go to lose my mind and find my soul. I can't think of a better place in the world. And camping has always been a huge part of my family and my life. To me, it is complete relaxation. You know, some people like the beach. I like the woods. You know, give me a tent, give me a good campfire, and life is really good.
I'm in a unique position here in this three-way conversation. I've spent time, loads of times with you in the camp, and I've spent time with you, Mike, in the camp.
Different types of camp.
Both camps. And both are a pleasure because, for one, as you said, Amy, they're in the woods. Mm-hmm. And there's no noise, there's no nothing. There's simplicity, that's the main thing.
Yep.
Good friends, good chat, coffee, good food.
Clean air, grounding yourself. It's
games.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Communication. That's it. That's brilliant. Play games at Mike's. Don't know how many times I've fought with your dad at cards. But I absolutely could do it every day of the week.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking online. Maybe a listener or a viewer wants to get into camping and they think to themselves, geez, what do I need? I remember when I got into backpacking and camping about 10 years ago. That was a major obstacle. Like, well, what do I need? And I don't remember there really being a lot of resources at that time yet, even on the internet. But now, like, you can go to the REI website. They're kind of an outdoor gear company, REI. I think there's a location in Rochester, New York.
There is, yeah.
But they have a great comprehensive list of all the things you could possibly need, things that are both essential and then kind of optional things. And so, you know, kind of the basic, what I found here, if what you need for camping really is a tent, sleeping bag, sleeping pad, maybe a camping pillow, although some people can use their clothes. You have to have a headlamp at night, maybe some extra batteries. And of course, it depends on the type of camping you want to do, but camp chairs can be great, especially maybe if you're in like an RV or you know, going to a campground, a lantern and a rope. With stuff sacks to hang a bear bag, a multi-tool stove and fuel, fire starter. I like cotton balls soaked in Vaseline. Those are a great fire starter. And some cookware, some soap, towels, toilet paper. You might need some of that. You never know. A toothbrush, first aid, sunscreen, insect repellent, water filter and treatment. And of course, a backpack if you're going backpacking. If not backpacking. And that's the great thing about being outdoors and camping. You can do canoe trips. You can go to a campground. You can be near as many people as you want. You can be like in a little village setting at a KOA kind of campground with a swimming pool and activities. Or you can be in the middle of nowhere all by yourself.
And it's been all of that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you go to, say, Lake George or Thousand Islands, mm-hmm. then there are these things. One night we were at Mary and Greg, Amy's mum and dad, were at their camp, and well, it was your camp as well. I can't remember where it was, you'll know where it was. And we all decided to pile into the car and go and play bingo. And on the way back, there was thousands of frogs.
Oh my God. It was like something biblical.
It was as if somebody
it was awful.
Oh, no.
And we were trying to drive. We had no option but to drive over all of these frogs to get home.
Yeah,
we were in Clayton, New York. And the only road leading to our camp, which is a very, it's probably 10 miles, It's paved, but all the frogs were on the pavement and they wouldn't get off. And we were hitting them and the kids were in the car and they were screaming bloody murder because you could hear them pinging like popcorn. It was awful.
And every noon again,
it'd never forget it.
Every noon again, it'd be a big ping, like a big frog.
It'd be all go, oh! It was the most disturbing yet one of those memories that will never leave us because we laugh every time we talk about it. It was like popcorn frog everywhere. Oh, and then we started naming them. We're like, there goes Fred. There goes Wilma. There goes
yeah. Yeah. Western New York.
It was biblical. We'll put it that way.
Yep. I remember then, that. A lot of frogs out there.
Then there was, you know, one of the things I learned about going to camp is the first time I went to camp, I realized time stands still. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
You just go there. You know, and your life is kind of structured by time because you're right, I can only sit for an hour because then I need to go and do the dinner or I need to go into work and call somebody or I need to do that. So you're kind of structured. I need to get my bed because I'm up early in the morning.
Yeah.
Then it occurs to you when you go to camp, you don't need to do any of that. You can do whatever you want.
Yep.
You can sit up to 2 in the morning, watch a fire and drink a beer. You can play a game. You can... So it melts away, this idea of time. And that is when you truly relax, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we used to take our kids. We have 3 kids, but we used to take them camping. My whole family's always been into camping and being outdoors, really important for the kids to, you know, get out and just explore the world. But one of the things, my kids now, they still will just get in a car and go camping because it is a way to ground you. But one of the things I loved when the kids were little was they got to do everything that your kids can't do at home. They were dirty. They played with fire. They didn't wear clothes half the time. You know, they were just happy to be kids. And I think that is so important for everyone and adults. You know, sometimes I just want to not do my hair and not put my makeup on and not be professional Amy or business Amy. Or I just want to like sit by a campfire at 10 in the morning, smelling like campfire, don't care that I smell, drinking coffee and laughing with people or playing cornhole at 10 in the morning and not caring that the dirt got all over you. Who cares? It doesn't matter. And that's, I think it's so important to sometimes break away from, you know, the society that we know and just be one with the earth and be okay with being dirty.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I'm so dirty at camp that even the dogs don't want to hang out with me.
I don't know if it's
Where's
the
Andy?
Dirt.
Just follow that line of flies. Just follow that line of flies.
Pig Pen. That's Andy's camp name. Well, that sounds wonderful. It sounds like a great place that you guys have built. And I'm sure you're proud of it. And that's your next song, Proud of the House We Built by Brooks and Dunn. Kix Brooks and Ronnie Dunn, I believe. Their final concert was in 2010, but they still perform on their own. And in particular, Brooks is a real philanthropist, raising money for Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt, for the Gilda's Club, St. Thomas Breast Cancer Center, he does these Rock the Barn concerts at his home near Nashville. So that's really, really wonderful. But why this song?
I think that this song absolutely is me and my husband. You know, we don't have, you know, a big mansion or anything fancy, but what we have, we're really proud of. We worked really hard to get there.
Yeah.
Diving into swimming holes, you and me dove off into the great unknown. We were barely getting by, taking care of each other. Then I became a daddy, you became a mother. Was an uphill battle nearly every day. Looking back, I wouldn't have it any other way.
the house we built. It's stronger than sticks, stones, and steel. It's not a big place sitting up high on some hill. A lot of things will come and go, but love never will. Oh, I'm proud. I'm proud of the house we built. Still working our way through the land of milk and honey. At the end of the day, there's always more bills than money. I close my eyes at night and I still feel the same fire in my heart I felt out in that field. I'm proud of the house we built. It's stronger than sticks, stones, and steel. It's not a big place sitting up high on some hill. A lot of things will come and go, but love never will. I'm proud. Oh, I'm proud of the house we built. Not a big place sitting up high on some hill. A lot of things will come and go, but love never will. I'm proud of the house we built. It's stronger than sticks, stones, and steel. It's not a big place sitting up high on some hill. A lot of things will come and go, but love never will. I'm proud. Oh, I'm proud of this house. I'm proud. Yeah, I'm proud of the house I'm proud. Yeah, I'm proud of the house we
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Getaway on WGXE Acre 90.7 FM. Today's guest is Amy Tessier, and we are discussing the songs and items that she would take on a Catskill Cabin Getaway. WGXE is community radio that relies on support from listeners like you. Please visit WGXE.org to make a donation or become a sustaining member today.
Amy, your next item, and I'm sure you've imbibed, indulged, partaken in cards at camp. That is what you're taking on your Catskill cabin getaway, cards. Do you just mean like a 52-card deck?
Yeah. So cards are something that my family plays a lot of and a little bit of everything. So I think my family's wonderful and we're all incredible people. We would do anything for you until you play cards with us, and then we become the most competitive people you've ever met in your life.
Yes, I can attest to that.
Unfortunately, Andy's not as good as me, so it rubs him the wrong way sometimes. But
see, this is just bunkum, as they say in Scotland, bunkum. I taught everything Amy knows about cribbage. Our dad is I'm Greg's mentor.
Okay.
And there's a game that they play,
Euchre.
I've never played that game before, and I since learned recently that it is a, forgive my language, a bastardized version of bridge.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if you've ever played bridge.
No.
So it's kind of like cribbage, euchre. But you play in tournaments and stuff like that?
We do.
In pubs and bars and
we
stuff?
We do. We play in tournaments. It's a hard game to learn, but once you learn it, it's a really fun game. It's very competitive. It's just a great game. You know, we play euchre a lot. There's really not many games we don't try or play. Obviously cribbage is something that's great. My husband and I can play that at night. We'll play, you know, a few hands. Sometimes it's over who's going to do the laundry or, you know, whoever wins. You know, cards are just such a huge, huge part of my life. I love cards. I could play cards every day. It's just something that brings me joy, and I love a good competition.
Yeah, I love cribbage. Now, one thing I have unique to me in this three-way conversation again is that I have played the game golf in Mike's, and I've played golf at yours, but I think you call it something different.
They called it baseball, but it's baseball. Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, so I played both in both houses.
Nice.
Both cabins, rather. So there you are.
I was recently introduced to golf on steroids. I believe it's called Sky Joe. And it's a card game. Instead of using like face cards and things, all the cards are numbered from -2 up to 12. And but basically the same rules. And you play with 12 cards instead of 6, which is how we usually play what we call golf.
Wow.
Yeah. It gets pretty intense. Yeah, and that idea, though.
The next time I come to your cabin, you can show me how to play it, Mike.
Yeah, it gets pretty crazy. Nicole, my wife, I think she's borderline psychic, because every time we play, she like just destroys all of us. She just has the supernatural ability to, I don't know. She's also has a master's degree in math, so. But
she is the luckiest person I've ever met. There's times I want to slap her, because there's this game called, what's it called?
Poker?
No poker. The game where it's not a traditional deck of cards. It's the Royal.
Oh, Five Crowns.
Five Crowns.
Oh, I played that. And yeah.
You're sitting there with like 10 cards in hand, and she'll say, "I'm out."
And oh, no.
Like, you know what? Amy, I just want to slap you right now. It's just Amy.
So, Andy, that's when you need to get your own pack, 52, and you need to go sit down someplace and play solitaire. Now, solitaire is mentioned in your next song, Amy, Flowers on the Wall by the Statler Brothers. Solitaire with 51 cards or something, the lyric goes. Now, solitaire, it's from the Latin solitarius, meaning isolation. And some other kind of cool trivia, Microsoft's Solitaire first appeared on Windows in 1989, I believe. The highest score you can earn in the standard version of Microsoft Solitaire is 24,113. Before we recorded tonight, I played Solitaire and ended up with zero. I don't know how you get 24,113, but I'm not very good at it.
That's because you're not good at it, Mike.
And the listeners or viewers right now, they may not remember. They probably heard the song before, Flowers on the Wall by the Statler Brothers, but it has appeared in movies from time to time. In particular, in the 1995 film Die Hard with a Vengeance, Bruce Willis's character John McClane is describing his suspension from the police force, saying he was smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. And I had a trivia question for you guys. Bruce Willis references this song, Flowers on the Wall, in Die Hard with a Vengeance. What other movie did he reference? Does he actually sing the lyrics in?
Ooh. Pulp Fiction? No.
Amy says Pulp Fiction. What do you say, Andy?
I know it's Pulp Fiction.
Ding, 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 ding. That is correct. He's sitting in the car.
Flowers, and then he sees the guy in the road and then knocks him over.
That's correct. Yeah. So in two different movies, Bruce Willis has referenced or sung the lyrics.
Yep.
Should we check it out?
Sure.
You're concerned about my happiness, but all that thought you're giving me is conscience, I guess. If I were walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry none.
While you and your friends are worried about me, I'm having lots of fun.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with a deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do.
Last night I dressed in tails, pretended I was on the town. As long as I can dream, it's hard to slow the swinger down. So please don't give a thought to me, I'm really doing fine. You can always find me here and having quite a time.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with a deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do.
It's good to see you, I must go. I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes are not accustomed to this light. And my shoes are not accustomed to this hard concrete. So I must go back to my room and make my day complete.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with a deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. Don't tell me I've nothing to do.
That was Flowers on the Wall by the Statler Brothers. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Getaway on WGXC Acra. That's 90.7 FM. Today's guest is Amy Tessier, and we are discussing the songs and items that she would take on a Catskill Cabin Getaway. WGXC is community radio that relies on support from listeners like you. Please visit WGXC.org to make a donation or become a sustaining member today. Amy, I completely forgot why that song.
So when I was young, my parents decided to surprise us and take us to Florida to go to Disney World and all the fancy places. And my grandparents lived down there, but it, you know, back, you know, then it was really hard to travel with, you know, three kids and all of that. And so to save money, we took my father's old van. Well, my father had the Statler Brother tape stuck in his van, and you couldn't listen to anything for 26 straight hours down and 26 hours back. And we memorized every song on that tape because it's all we listened to. And every single time I hear that song, I just light up and smile because it was just a great memory. We got to see Mickey Mouse for the first time and do all these things we'd never done. And that whole trip down. And so every time I hear it, we know every word, we sing along and we laugh. And 26 hours times two of listening to the same five songs, because you couldn't flip it either.
Yeah.
Because it was a tape.
Yeah. So we just laugh and it's just a good memory.
Oh, that's wonderful. Amy, you know, I'm assuming you must have some pictures from that, maybe that trip to Florida. And that's your next item that you would take on your Catskill Cabin Getaway, pictures of friends and family. So tell us about some of those.
So, you know, I'm absolutely a firm believer that, you know, your people, you know, and when I say, you know, it's not just, you know, family is, you know, the people that, you know, you might've been born into, or the people that you brought into your life, like Mr. Andy here, who's Uncle Andy to my kids, you know, friends and family are the only thing that really matters in the world. I mean, at the end of the day, a house is just bricks and sticks, but you know, the people in your circle and your inner people, your go-to people, your, you know, live and die by people are the most important thing in the world.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I, you know, from time to time we have guests that, they want to bring pictures, and, we've done a lot of photography trivia. I found out recently that the cameras, or maybe we did this and I forgot it, I don't know. The cameras that the Apollo 11 mission took on the moon 12 Hasselblad cameras are still there because they were too heavy to bring back, and they wanted to bring 25 kilos of rock samples. So, yeah, just left the cameras up there and brought back a bunch of rocks.
I wonder if they brought back the film.
They did, yes. Yeah, that's where we got all the moon pictures from, yeah.
Right. So do you think if they found those cameras, it'd be a bunch of alien selfies?
I hope so. Oh, that would be so awesome.
It would be awesome. Right? Yeah. You need the third eye.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And I found it's estimated that there are more than a trillion photos taken every year nowadays.
I believe it with the phones.
That's exactly it. With phones, they said 95 million photos are uploaded daily just to Instagram. 300 million are uploaded to Facebook daily. So right there, that's 400 million pictures just for two social media platforms, let alone people just taking pictures for whatever.
But you know, see, like back in the day, like the 70s and the 80s, 60s and all that, photographs, although people took less photographs, they were meaningful. The photographs were meaningful because you put them in an album and you kept them and they were a tangible object.
Yeah.
Nowadays, we're on the phone, somebody might flip 60 photographs of a
tiger
something. Yeah, just because.
Because again, yeah.
So I think that I don't think they're as revered as they used to be because they're so easy to delete and, they're not tangible anymore.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I hadn't really considered that, but it's true. I mean, I do it. I just will fire off a bunch of pictures and then go through them and delete them later. And it's true.
All that talk about pictures and it's kind of make me a wee bit sad. I think we need another song to uplift us.
Sounds good. What do you recommend, Amy?
I think we should play Happy by Pharrell Williams.
I think so too.
Great choice. Why that song?
Because it makes you happy.